Well, thank you very much for coming. My name is Rob Griffiths. I'm an e-learning coordinator and the grant lead, a part of the Digital Union at Ohio State. The Digital Union is a part of Learning Technology, which is the academic technology, sort of the front-end area of interacting with faculty and staff and students around campus. Digital Union is actually a physical space, but also a virtual type of space where we provide consultations in person via email, help desk, those sorts of things. And we also do workshops both virtually and in person. But basically, it's a front door for faculty to be able to come in and get help with their academic problems or technology issues, those sorts of things. What I'll be talking about today is the grant program that we have at the Digital Union, a little bit about how we got started with the grant program, how we made it a collaborative process both with the support staff around campus and with faculty and areas in their own departments, and we'll go on from there. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the change that's occurring at Ohio State, talk a little bit about the grant process, the recipient process, what the recipients went through as they received a grant, some of the lessons learned that we've experienced, some tips that we have to provide to you if you're looking to do some sort of collaborative process like what we did, a question and answer period, and if there's time, we can go in and do some small group work and talk about some conclusions. I do want this to be a conversation because I want to give you an overview of the different steps that we've gone through, but I don't want to go into the weeds on anything in particular that's not relevant or of interest to this group. So I would like to get some feedback from you about what it is that you'd like to learn more about, so we can definitely get into that. The handout that I provided you is simply just a helpful guide for note-taking. If you're using your iPad or other sheet of paper, that's perfectly fine, but it's there if it would be helpful. So about 3 years ago, Ohio State has a new president, E. Gordon Gee, and he made a statement about one university. It's a very large institution, about 55,000 students or so, and in that kind of size, people start doing their own little thing in their own little silos. I'm sure even at a small institution, silos are a big issue that you have. People not communicating with one another. But he made the statement about one university. And about a year and a half ago, we received a new CIO, Kathleen Starkoff, and she really made made a difference about the one university mantra. She wanted to break down the silos that were within the office of the CIO, Office of the Chief Information Officer, and work together to understand what each other are doing and how can we better serve the students and faculty and staff at Ohio State. So in 2009, she took disparate groups that were within the office and connected them together. Digital Union was one of them, the physical space. We had people that were running the servers that did media streaming. We had people that did physical classroom space setup, people that did physical classroom support, those sorts of things. And they all came together into one group called Learning Technology. At the same time, we were looking at how can we start making a larger difference going from individual instructors, individual successes, and really start bringing it up and scale it up to department levels. What can we do to help make a difference for departments as a whole rather than just individual students or individual instructors? At the same time at Ohio State, we have a couple other things that are going on. We have a conversion to semesters. We're currently on quarters. And in 2012, we were supposed to be going to semesters. And we've also had this year called Year of E-Learning that was proclaimed by the provost as a way to look at technology about how can we start infusing technology on campus to enrich the lives of our students and increase efficiency and engagement with our faculty and all these different reasons. One of the main issues that we're experiencing is as we move to semesters, we're actually running out of classroom space. We won't have enough classroom space for all the classes that have to occur at that transition. So how do we start doing more blended and online courses? So there's a confluence of factors that are occurring here that are really pushing us to how do we work together to make this happen? So what we did in my particular role is we looked at how can we start providing personnel support and how can we provide financial support to encourage people to start using technology, to encourage people to start looking and working together to enhance the lives of the students. And so what we did was in June 2009, we started working with a cohort of people at Ohio State, both within the digital unit, but we also looked at the physical classroom space. We looked at registrar. We looked at all these different people that were on campus, and we got together, little committee, and we started looking at comparator institutions. How are other institutions providing grants about infusing technology in their classes? So we looked at the CIC, which is the Committee for Interinstitutional Collaboration, which is basically the Big Ten schools and University of Chicago. We started looking at other large and small universities, and we looked at some liberal arts colleges as well, and looked at what grant programs that they have. We started generating ideas. And from that, we created about four first-round ideas and four second-round ideas that could be implemented at Ohio State. And we took those to our senior leadership, and we said, what can we do with the budget that we have? From that point, we had two different types of grants that we were able to do. We were having one called the Impact Grant, which is what I'll be talking about today, and the other one is Professional Development Grant. But the Impact Grant, what I'm going to be focusing on, is really a way to how do we make an impact for large courses at a departmental level, make it so how do we engage students at an introductory course or a key required course in the department, make a change there, and so the students then help drive the change throughout the rest of the department because they're now having some sort of level of expectation of technology used in their classes that other faculty will then feel like they need to start meeting as the students go through. So we did the comparative research, and we created a project charter for these impact grants, which is about a three-year process. And right now we're in year one. We're actually just wrapping up the first round of impact grants and gearing up for the applications for the second round of impact grant. And we tried really hard to connect it to our e-learning strategy report. If your campus has an e-learning strategy report, I really recommend making sure that your work connects to that so you're going in the same direction that the Office of the CIO or the university wants to go. And if you want to see an example of what I'm working by, you can go to that website. But basically, if you haven't done a project charter before, we're looking at the problem and opportunity that we're trying to address. So large courses, required courses, courses that are trying to become blended or online, those are some of the opportunities that we have. Problems running out of classroom spaces, low adoption rate, those sorts of things. We looked at some of the goals that we're trying to accomplish, infuse technology into the department, incorporate some collaboration process between different faculty members in that department, with staff, with students in that department, graduate students, to work together toward revamping a course, let's say. Scope is very important, making sure that you're staying within your scope, what you're trying to do and what you're not trying to do, essentially, making sure you have that difference. But then some of the deliverables, constraints, budgets, resources, those sorts of things. If you want to see an example of a project chart, I can certainly give it to you. So from that point, in November of 2009, we sent out a request for proposals. We sent out emails to chairs and deans across campus. We had open Q&A sessions. We had email responses, all these different ways to really engage the higher levels within the department. One of the key factors, though, is that you did have to have approval from a dean or a chair in order to submit your application, so we knew that there was going to be buy-in from the top level anyway. From that point, if you want to see the grant website, some of the policies we have in place there, feel free, and also the go.osu.edu/IG is the specific one about the impact grant with the application form and those sorts of things. So in November, we were receiving applications, and then in December, we received 19 applications, and we whittled it down to 10, and from those 10, those finalists, we had a wide representation of a recommendation committee to look them over and provide feedback. And this was a really important part for us, is that it was more than just the digital union staff that was looking at this. We had two outside faculty members, a library representative, we had a staff member outside of the digital union part of it. We had undergraduate students as a part of this recommendation committee. And actually one of the really beneficial things is having that undergraduate student on the committee, because we were actually able to select a recipient that we otherwise wouldn't have selected because of the strong recommendation of that undergraduate student who had been through those courses before, knew what troubles they were experiencing in that class, and saw how the proposal would actually make a dramatic impact on how they were hoping to change that course. So I would highly recommend making sure that you have a diverse group. One thing that we've learned from that process is we're also going to have a university registrar person on the committee for the next round, because they're able to look at retention rates and other sorts of things at a administrative level, at a higher level, of what kind of impact this change could possibly make. So from those top 10, we selected three impact grant recipients, and impact recipients received $15,000 with a 1-to-2 matching, meaning they had to bring $7,500 to the table, and we provided 200 hours of expertise time, digital union time, learning technology time to help them throughout an entire year. Excuse me. The financial part of it, we did provide the cash, $15,000, but their matching funds didn't have to be actual physical money. It could be faculty release time, that kind of thing, or resources that they were lending to the process, that kind of thing. And that's what most people did. They had faculty release time as a part of this. So for a full year, having a person have a one course release was more than enough to be able to make up the $7,500. So the three recipients, we had math, chemistry, and EEOB, which is evolution, ecology, and organismal biology. Math was looking to revamp their 151 course, which is a very large introductory-level calculus course. And at Ohio State, these math classes were taught with chalk and chalkboard only. So students sat in, they had somebody up there with the chalk writing down, and when they left, that was it. They may or may not be able to hear the instructor well, they may not be able to understand the instructor very well, and once you left that class, it was done. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to record and annotate their lecture. We helped them with Camtasia, with a Symposium smart board, and work through how to capture their lectures in class using these technologies, and then sending it over to the streaming server so it would be able to be placed in their course management system, and students would be able to review it anytime and see the actual writing and hear the lecturer as the person went through. They also wanted to engage the students more than they had done in the past, which was no engagement before. And they created their homegrown Twitter clicker system. And if you want to see an example of that, I have it listed here. But basically, some of the concerns that I think we've heard throughout the conference was they didn't want to have people buy clicker systems that may not otherwise be used for the rest of the math courses. And so they wanted to have some opportunity to have low-level engagement, just be able to answer questions at the beginning of class, just to get their experience up with this type of technology before they looked at further adoption with an actual system or actually asking questions during class, that kind of thing. Chemistry, in the preparation for their conversion to semesters, they connected their lecture and recitation. Before they were a separate class, and now they're combining it to one larger, longer class. And with that longer time, they wanted to look at ways to engage students with multiple different types of activities during class, but also have them do work outside of class, which is something that was new for them. They had never really asked them to go online and do something between classes, get prepared for the next lecture recitation class. So they had in-class videos, they had group activities that were occurring through the technology in the class, they did online assessment, they had outside work to do before they came in, they were quizzed, those sorts of things. And then EEOB, this had an emerging technology focus. They wanted to use some newer technology like an iPad, mobile phones, that kind of thing, to help more students become participants in the lab type of activities that they were supposed to do. So we put the recipients through three phases. For January to March, for about 3 months or so, we went through a planning phase where they met with me and some other people through the planning process to come up with their own project charter, making sure that they knew what scope it is that they wanted to reach, what problem and opportunity they were trying to meet, objectives and outcomes. And so we were able to use that as a guiding force throughout the rest of the time to be able to say, well, I know you're interested in this, but we really want to keep it restricted to this focus right now, so please let's focus that on in the future type of thing. A part of this process is that we did do a phased approach for the funding. So we gave them $10,000 up front when they finished Project Charter, and then we gave them $5,000 when they were finished with their assessment plan. So we knew that there was going to be a way to assess this project before we gave them the final piece of the carrot, I guess. Only math and chemistry was able to get through the planning process, and so we actually only finished up with two impact grants. EEOB was a great lesson learned for us because we had some working assumptions that they were collaborating with each other better than what they actually were. At Ohio State, we have a central IT support unit, of which I'm a part of, but there are also departments on campus that have their own support units. And what we were assuming was that the chair of the department knew who he should be talking to and who should be involved in the conversations on his end. And so I wasn't so much worried about, hey, have you talked to this support person, that support person in your area? I thought that was happening on its own. And so when it came to look at the technology that they wanted to use to engage the students in this lab portion, their technology people came in at the end and said, well, you know, we're the ones that have to maintain this. We had no idea about this. We've never been talked to about this. And it was an issue, to say the least. So one of the lessons we've learned is that don't make assumptions that the dean or chair knows who all should be involved. And it should be part of our role to make sure that they're engaged in all the conversations that they need to have. So after the project charter was finished, we went into the training preparation phase. We trained them on Symposium smart boards. We trained them on lecture capture, how to use streaming media, how to use the learning management system, how to make online quizzes, the whole gamut. And we worked very closely with them throughout this whole process to make sure it happened. We set up connections with the registrar to make sure that we had the classroom space that would be able to facilitate the type of class that they were wanting to have. We talked with the assessment expert on campus. We talked with the accessibility expert that was on campus. We talked with IRB, the Institutional Review Board. We talked with FERPA. We went through the whole process of making sure that we were talking with the people we thought those recipients needed to be talking to. So when it came to the implementation, there wasn't any surprises of what was going to happen. So during this time, we did the assessment plan where they received the final $5,000. We got IRB expedited approval. It wasn't a large deal. If you've been through IRB before, it seemed like a very trivial thing to do, but not neither. Math had never done a process like this before, and so it was very overwhelming to them. But now they have great satisfaction that they'll be able to present their work at a conference and have it officially sanctioned by the university, and it was a very uplifting thing for them. So we worked through September, and then we went into a production phase September through December, where we actually implemented the work that we've done. So we're implementing it right now. This is the first phase. I wish I could provide you some feedback from the students about how they've experienced it at the end. But maybe in the future I'll be able to do that. But at this stage, we're going to be implementing it and writing a report with the assessment that we've done. Okay. Throughout the entire phase, all three phases, we did implement an idea that we called Idea Labs, which were all recipient meetings. So the faculty, staff, and students from math and chemistry, and at the beginning, EEOB, all came together and we had facilitated conversation about what problems are you experiencing? What successes have you had? And this was very enriching. The first one that we had didn't go so well. I think it was led by chemistry, and they basically did more of a lecture-style presentation of what they were going to do. But we learned from that, and we made it more of a conversation for the remainder of the sessions. And chemistry, having gone through the IRB process before, provided a lot of feedback to the math team about things to consider, how to write one up. And hearing it from another professor really hit home for them. And the students were able to learn the process that instructors are trying to deal with and think about. And it was a good overall collaboration on that part. We also had the recipients blog throughout the process. I think we could have done better with this. The recipients weren't hesitant to write a blog, which was surprising to me. I think the way that it could become better, though, is to have a schedule set in place of when you are to blog about your successes and failures so far. I was looking to them to be a little bit more proactive to say, hey, this is what I'm dealing with right now. And they were waiting for me to say, hey, why don't you write about what you're dealing with right now? But I think that'll get better as we go through. They were very willing to share information, which was great. So what we've learned from this process, what has worked well? Personalizing messages to deans and chairs to say, hey, this is something that we can help you out with. I know that you're thinking about online courses. You're hearing these technology things. Maybe there's an underlying issue that you're experiencing in your area of student engagement or instructor efficiency or anytime, anyplace learning, this is a grant that can help you. A clearly defined rubric, which is something that we had established throughout the review process with that recommendation committee. And if you're interested in looking at what we've done, I did put those as lecture notes on the online space for this presentation as well that you can download and take a look at. Doing the project plan collaboratively in the wiki was really beneficial. This wasn't something where I left up to them to think about what they had to do, but we worked together. We had three or four face-to-face meetings, and between each face-to-face meeting, we worked together in this wiki space to define scope, to talk about some of the issues, define when the deliverables were. You know, they get over-ambitious, too. They get really excited about all the possibilities that they might be able to do with this grant, and so then they start saying, I'm going to do all these things for the next 3-4 months, and from the experiences that we've had of working with faculty, of understanding the learning curve of some of these things, we were able to scale them back to something that was going to be successful and work well for them and for their students. Having a diverse selection committee was really important, making sure we're talking to the accessibility experts, talking with the physical classroom support team, registrar, those folks was really good. Having liaisons for partner groups was really important. So a part of this process is we had members of the Digital Union go to committee meetings for the Classroom Readiness Committee, to the registrar meetings, those sorts of things, so we could keep an eye on and an ear to some of the issues that they're dealing with, but also for us to be able to say, hey, we have this grant occurring right now. Remember, we have this thing going on right now, and don't make changes here because that could make impacts for what we're doing. We're trying to really make this insulated in a way that we can say, this is going to be successful. We're going to have an exemplar on campus. This class has worked well. We've all worked together to make it work well. And so they will provide great feedback for the rest of campus. What worked well as well? Documenting committee concerns. So for those other 17, 18 people that did not, or 16 people that did not receive the grant, I was sure to write down the concerns that the committee had about why they did not receive it, because we used those as an opportunity to keep in contact with those people that had applied for this grant. A, to encourage them to apply for this next round, but B, to make sure that we provided them some support at some level for their ideas that they wanted to do. So while there were only two ultimate winners of the impact grant, we maintain relationships with everybody else throughout the rest of the process. So it was a win-win. So as soon as they made a contact to us, we maintained that friendship and contact for them. Starting early of understanding IRB, doing the protocols to make you eligible to do IRB, talking with FERPA experts, copyright accessibility, getting that done early on, even during the preparation stage, during that charter building stage, was instrumental for us. It got people on board of what we were trying to do. Some areas on campus that really don't work with faculty on a day-to-day basis got insight to what services they provide actually mean to people on an individual basis. So that was really helped. FAPE funding really helped. Looking at the FAPE funding, meaning the $5,000 after the approval of the assessment plan. Open source models. We tried to avoid programming where we could. The only exception that we had really was Twitter Clicker, but they had an expert on staff of the math department that could write that up in about 3 hours in the afternoon, so it was a non-issue. But we really looked to open source modules that were already available on the internet through book publishers, those folks, to help reduce the amount of time that we had to try to find and hire an expert and work through those sorts of things. What worked for us is immediate edits to our documentation. We found out right away that when EEOB sort of blew up for us and they hadn't been talking with their technology liaisons as a part of the application process for the next round, now they are to supply the name of their technology liaison so we can have them a part of the initial meeting that we have to go over the grant and expectations and those sorts of things. So it really helped to, as soon as we found an issue where we saw, hey, that could be better next time, we implemented those changes so when the next time came around, it was already set for us. The hands-on support and production, meaning for the first 2.5 weeks of the quarter, we had grant team members on our end in class at the ready to help instructors as they got started in their classes. They were not left alone to figure things out when they were wanting to use them. And that was received very positively from the faculty. They had support right there. And the idea labs and blogs worked out very, very well. So some of the suggestions and lessons learned that we've had from this process was we did provide $15,000. However, that was mostly gone to help release faculty and staff time to work on the project. And so I know in the budget times that we're living in, or the difficult times we're living in, really focusing on the support and the release time for over a course of a year to think about a course, to get training on how to revamp your course, and then having somebody there to help you implement the course was really the baseline key benefit for this grant. That's what the recipients needed, what they wanted, and that's what worked out really, really well. High level of support, meaning if you have a CIO or if you have a director of learning technology-esque type of position at your institution, you have somebody that's that person's meeting with other higher level people in the registrar or in the office of research, those type of things, if you have those type of areas. Getting those people to see this as a priority makes your life a little bit easier because you're able to then say, I want to collaborate with you to make sure that we're doing our FERPA regulations correctly, and they're going to give you the time to be able to work with them because it's a priority for their higher level administrators. The importance of the project charter, we refer back to our project charter repeatedly throughout the entire process and still do now, knowing what's in scope and out of scope, what we're trying to achieve, making sure that we are matching our deliverables. It's an agreement that we've made with the recipient saying you are going to have this IRB application done by August 1st, and that's something that I can refer to in early July and say, are we on track to make this happen? And it's an agreement that they've made. They've made this together. We've made this together, and so that really helped out. A suggestion I also have is choose recipients across the adoption curve. Math is definitely, from the chalkboard perspective things to using technology, has had a lot more handholding and time. They're a lot closer to the 200 hours of support time than chemistry is. Chemistry had some needs, but we haven't spent nearly as much time with them as we have with math because they've been able to do a lot of things on their own. I would say that we spend about 170 hours or so with math and about 50 or so with chemistry. And I think that if we had two high needy recipients, we might have been sunk. And so I think going into the next term, we'll know that when we're looking at recipients, which ones are going to be able to have success and they need some support, and which ones can we really help and make a big difference on because they need our help a whole bunch, but choosing those recipients across the adoption curve. And aside, like I said before, assigning dates for blogs and ideas. Another thing we've learned is from the EEOB experience, we assume because the chair or dean had approved the application and was supportive of the application that everyone was on board and we were going to be all set. Came to find out that, you know, the dean or chair may not have involved faculty that he or she is working with about what the grant should be about when they're applying. And so interviewing the finalists, so we might choose five finalists this time and go in for a half an hour interview with the dean or chair and the people that they want to have involved in that initial conversation and just get a sense, are you ready for this? Are you thinking about this in the right way? Do you have the right people on board from the get-go for this process to work really, really well? And I think that by having that initial conversation before we make the final selection will help us avoid the future issues that we had with EEOB. Some final suggestions. To the recommendation committee, when you're working with people outside of your own area, people like from the libraries or the registrar, articulating the grant goals and priorities is important. Otherwise, you get a lot of different ideas of what it is that we should be doing. And really, this was a part of the Office of the CIO, Digital Union. We have a certain goal of increasing student engagement, of increasing instructor efficiency. So we want to make sure we're receiving grants that we're providing grants that will help us achieve that kind of mission that we have on campus. And articulating those goals to the committee will help make sure everyone's on the same page. Removing conflicts of interest, this might be obvious, but making sure that nobody in the department that has a finalist, you know, is on the recommendation committee. Faculty from that department aren't on there, so there's not a conflict of interest. It's kind of a minor point, but on the rubric, we initially only had a scale 1, 2, 3, and moving them to half scores for 1.5, 2.5, to 2.5, 3 type of thing allowed people to have a little bit more flexibility of choosing between these different areas. So one thing that we learned from the EOB project is making sure we know who owns the technology, who's responsible for the maintenance of the technology. It may or may not be an issue on your campus, but for us, with the central support team and with distributed support, making sure upfront who's going to be responsible for the maintenance of that technology after the grant period is over was very important, and that's what held us up with the EOB project and what ultimately led it to fail. So knowing that from front will be really helpful. Knowing who the dean chair, who all should be involved. One of the other issues that we ran into is that we could not find a classroom space that was set up in a way that would help the math team do exactly what it is that they wanted to do. So we had to involve the physical classroom design team in early to help us reroute wires and facilitate the microphones in a way that will allow them to efficiently capture the lecture, both for the lecture hall, but also directly into the computer. So everything is all assimilated into one packaged thing. And doing that really early on was important because we almost ran out of time with that one. Avoid programming and document changes in lesson learned. So this was a very large swath overview of the process from how we thought about this, who we talked to come up with some ideas, to how we selected some, the process the recipients went through, a little bit about the recipients and some of the things we've learned. But I really like to open this up to know where in the weeds we should be heading if you want to know more about specific areas or specific things that we've done. So please feel free to ask questions. Yes?
Did the funding come from your CIO's office?
Yeah, so the question is, did the funding come from the CIO's office? The $15,000 we provided, it did. It came from a technology fund that we had available to us. Our project charter for the grants is 3 years long. We had about 3 years of funding for two grants a year for 3 years. And so we're going to need to readdress how we're going to do our grants and what we will do at the end of the 3 years. So that was, it's a mixture of between one-time funds and annual funds. And at the end, we might be able to continue the impact grant as is, but only do one a year instead of two when we run out of the one-time funds. Yeah.
You mentioned that it was useful to have a student on the review committee who had taken the course, but it sounds like that was just the R&D minutes, right? Was that a requirement in the proposal to get the high school district to take the course before college?
So the question, it was a serendipitous that we had a student on the review committee. Actually, no. It was, I think if we didn't have the student on staff, we might not have selected the math team.
No, I mean, you said that the student on the review committee had taken the course. But was that serendipitous? I understand the value from the student on the review committee, but the fact that the student had actually taken the course.
I see. Yes, that was coincidence, that somebody that was on the committee was selected before we received any of the applications, before we received the 19. So the fact that she had taken the math class and said, this class is a problem, we need to fix it, and it sounds like they want to fix it, so don't let this chance pass you by, was really helpful for us. I think that if that student hadn't taken that class, you know, it could be that the student had friends that had taken the class, so it still might have worked out even if she hadn't taken it herself. But I thought the question that you were asking is, did they have to identify a student that had taken the class as a part of the application process, and that wasn't the case? It could very well be, yeah. I hadn't thought about that, of having a student representative to have somebody that we can contact. It might be possible during the interview process for the finalists to encourage them to invite a student in the class to talk about it. I hadn't thought about that. In fact, I'll make a note of it now. So I'm sure you. So the question is what kind of technology use is occurring at Ohio State? And that's a really difficult question to answer because some departments and colleges have their own support teams, and so they don't necessarily come to us when they need help. Some departments have a lot of money. For instance, the College of Business, the Medical Center, Other areas just don't need our help necessarily. So the ones that we hear from are usually the ones that don't have much funds and are ones that don't have their own support team, and so we are the support team for them. There are departments on campus like math who mostly use a chalkboard and don't do anything else. The biggest problem that they have is that the keyboard gets in the way from where they can place their acetate, you know, lecture things. I would say that there are, it's a tough question to answer for me. Okay, so basically if we can look at, we use Desire to Learn, our course management system. There are, I think we have about 10 colleges with lots of departments underneath, and I think about half of them use the learning management system heavily, and about half of them don't use it at all. And so we definitely aren't a place where everyone is using the technology. But a bigger problem is that we don't know what all technologies are being used on campus because it doesn't come back to the central team to know what's happening on campus. And that's actually an effort that we are changing right now, a little off topic from the impact grant, but we're doing an e-learning inventory across campus, and we're trying to figure out how do we collect information from different areas about what technology that they're using so we can then start making smarter decisions, leveraging each other to be able to get better deals on licensees and those sorts of things. Yes? Sure. Yes. For the Math 151, and they're also doing 152 in the same manner, they're doing two sections right now out of 12 with this pilot program that we've put in for the Impact Grant. And each section's about 150 to 170 students. And so we're looking at about 300 students a quarter for about four quarters. And as we scale it up, we're looking at several thousand. And since this is a 100-level course, they're going to get accustomed to be able to find their lecture notes online, to hear a recording, to be able to go back and review, take online quizzing to study and prepare for the midterm, that kind of thing. And we are assuming at that point, this will obviously be a longitudinal type of thing, but when they move to the 200, 300 level, 400 level classes that are still doing the chalkboard lessons, that there's going to be a disconnect between the students and the instructor, and we're going to expectations and force change. And that was the hope of the Impact Grant, and I hope that's what will happen. For chemistry, we're also looking at about 150 students. In these overall, I think each class is about 70 students. Each lecture recitation class is about 70 students, so we're looking at about 140 or so. And we're doing two sections of that class right now. And unfortunately, I don't remember how many total there are, but I think there are about eight for that. Yes?
So most of what you talk about is lecture capture and the ability of students to come back and take a look at things.
Yeah.
And further engage us in the classroom. Have you had any testing, I guess, with hybrid, which is students could be there, they could not be there, still participate? Have you guys done that all?
So as for the Impact Grant, that is not something that we've looked at. Basically, they're expected to be in class for the lecture, but then be able to go and review online. We haven't received reports yet of students just not coming to class more than usual because they were able to get things online, because I think there is still the benefit of being in class more than just being online at this particular moment in time for this process. But we have had other people that we've worked with to talk about how do we do blended courses, looking at quality matters type of thing, and these people are doing it this way and these people are doing it that way type of thing. Can you help me remember exactly what your question was?
I was trying to think if you had any experience with that blended learning, or if there were any pitfalls you guys have come across as far as looking at that possibility. Like, so you ran out of class space.
Yeah, I think we're just starting to get into that phase of looking at the blended courses because as a part of the semester change, obviously every single class has to go through a recertification type process to make sure that it's going to be okay and how many credit hours it's going to be worth and technology is the last thing that instructors are thinking about at this time. When it could help resolve some of the issues that they're facing, it's just one more thing that they it's going to blow up in their minds. So I think we're going to be looking at that very closely very soon, and I think we just haven't we're not there quite yet. Yes?
Did any of the other 19 books submitted, did they go off and do their project on their own?
None of the other ones went and did their full project idea on their own. However, we were able to work with some of them to be able to implement some aspect or idea of them. We provided about 20 hours of support to the non-recipients. Came up with a little miniature type of project charter that they wanted to do, and we worked with them for that. Some never responded to us, and I don't know if they've done anything or not. Other ones have kept in contact the whole year of saying, well, can we do this for the next round? How would we do this in the next round? So we've actually consulted with them to help them get prepared for the next round to apply again. Yes? So at Ohio State, we have the Digital Union, which is focused more on the technology, pedagogy, implementation. We also have an area called UCAT, which is the University Center for the Advancement of the Teaching. And they don't work with the technology. They're looking more at strategies for class discussion, those sorts of things. They were also a part of the initial conversations during the planning period. And so they were involved. I think they could be more involved in the future, but we didn't work that closely this time. Yes?
You mentioned that being implemented right now.
Yes.
And the report is going to be forthcoming.
Yes.
Is that going to be something that's open? Are you going to create a website for it, or is it just going to be considered by the state?
No. So right now we are. On our website, we have the description of the grant, and we have application, and we have all this other information. We're also going to be building an archive page for the conclusion of all these grants. So we also provide professional development grants, and we're working on an archive page right now to talk about all the different events that those people have done. And the same sort of thing with the impact grant, we will provide the report on that archive page at this website when we're finished with it. So it's something that – this is not something that we're trying to keep close to the chest. We want this to be something that is – for benefit at Ohio State and elsewhere, if it's helpful elsewhere. But we want people to learn from the process that the math and the chemistry team went through, how they did it, what findings that they got from it, what the student feedback was from it, and, hey, can't you do this too? Yeah. Yes? So how are we going to measure the impact? That's been it's not something that we have universal for both teams. They both came in with expectations and a problem that they were trying to solve. So first and foremost, they came up with survey and qualitative type of items that will get addressing the issues that they're trying to resolve. We have some survey items from the Digital Union that we're talking about the grant process, but essentially we want an impact statement from the chair or dean, the person that was helping to sponsor for this. What difference did this make for the campus or for that department, I guess I should say. We have the ability to look at sort of mean, median, mode of grades, that kind of thing. So we have some of these general usage statistics that we can provide, but then it is more based on the individual team's desire to know, are students more engaged? Or are they happier? Like whatever it is that they wanted to find out is what they put in for a survey form. They developed it. They developed it as part of the grant. I have some experience in survey design and working with IRB, and so I was able to collaborate with them to say, what is it that you're hoping to find out? And then they provided me a draft of the survey, and I said, well, this is what you will – these are the type of answers that you're able to get from this survey. Is this the same as what the answers are that you're trying to find? And in some cases, yes, some cases, no. So we had to go through a process of making sure that we're asking the questions that they were wanting to answer to get answers that they wanted to have. So that was a process, but it worked out well. Yes?
Can you talk about your idea labs a little more?
Sure. So the Idea Lab was a situation where we had all the recipients come together. We did this once a quarter. So we've done this four times to talk about the successes and failures that they've experienced so far and be able to talk about it. Like I said, the first one that we did had EEOB, chemistry and math, the part of it, and chemistry led it. And they did a more of a lecture style of this is a symposium smart board and this is what we're doing. And it really did not engage EEOB and math at all. And so we learned from that, and from then on, we actually met in this space within the Digital Union, which was more of a large circle table, and we were able to sit around, and I would then mediate the conversation in a way I would say, what are you working on right now? And they would be able to talk about it. What has gone well so far, and what are you struggling with? What are the next steps that you're dealing with? And be able to hear the other teams, be able to hear what the struggles are. Oftentimes when math was struggling with something, chemistry had already done it, and so they were able to talk about it in a way that was, hey, this is what we've done when we experienced that problem, and it worked out really, really well, better than I imagined, actually, for those. And they were really excited about helping each other out. I will say that since math was so new at using technology that they didn't necessarily provide as much help back to the chemistry team, but being able to articulate what their problems were and what their next steps were to resolve them, I think was beneficial for them in and of itself. To be able to get it out there and have it being said out loud and other people hear it was helpful. So I think it worked really, really well. And the thing there as well is they didn't proactively communicate with each other. It was something that I had to initiate and say, hey, let's get together at this time. Not everybody was required to be there, but at least one representative from each team had to be there. But basically, I found that anybody involved in the project that was available at that time came, which was helpful. So math usually had about five or six people there, and chemistry usually had two or three people there. So it was a good group of people to talk. Yes? So what was beneficial for us? The question was, how did we allocate resources, essentially, for this process? What was beneficial for us is that this was a priority and goal for the Office of Chief Information Officer. And so some of the chopping of old priorities had already occurred, and so this was something that was being set aside specifically for the grant process. My job is 60, 70% leading the grants, and so I was the main coordinator and liaison for most of the process. And then as I had a colleague with a certain expertise, like a smart technology or using the clicker or whatever, I would bring them in for a consultation for an hour here, an hour there. But it was mostly my coordination that would facilitate everybody moving forward. I think we are about out of time. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.